keeping the rats out of the seed corn. I was feeling real smart, Alec. But on a farm, it's always something to worry about or be excited about. Foot-and-mouth disease, weevils, too much rain, too little rain, hired hands going off in the night with half your tools. I'm a gambler, I reckon, because the way I see it, farming is one big dice game.
You talking like a dang fool, Will, said Mr. Lias. Ain't nothing exciting about a dang weevil or planting for 17-cent cotton and then cotton goes down to 12-cent 'cause everybody overplanted. I'm glad to be out of it. Every now and again you make enough to cover the mortgage and taxes and pay off the store that give you credit. But even when it's a good fall, you might as well count on it, Will. 4 years out, your mule's gonna die or your barn burned down.
I wasn't discouraged. I've heard farmers talk like that all my life, Mr. Lias. But see, I aim to study agriculture over at the university and learn better ways. For instance, I ain't gonna buy corn from a store to feed my livestock. I'm gonna grow my own corn. And cotton ain't going to be my only cash crop.
Well, if it ain't, boy, you can't get no lean from the store. And if you don't get no lean, you can't buy no seed and guano. Well, you could, I reckon, being who you are. Your granddaddy'll give you good terms, and he ain't going to charge you double when you send a nigger to town to get sugar and coffee on credit.
I didn't like him suggesting Grandpa overcharged, but I let that go by. Naturally, Grandpa would give me favorable terms. But it was better farming methods I counted on to turn a profit. I'll learn how to plan ahead, I said.
See, can you learn how to plan ahead for rain or drought, son? Do that, and they'll give you a prize over at that ag college.
Mr. Lias clucked his team up to a trot.
Hope you don't never have to find out what it's like being poor. But ain't no farmer in Georgia seen that prosperity Mr. Henry W. New South Grady used to write about in them Atlanta newspapers. When I was farming, I'd go in town and them bankers and storemen treated me like white trash. Since I got this here job carrying the mail, I get some respect.
As we rode past the old barn, weathered gray and leaning into a clump of hollyhocks and daisies, I pointed toward the shed.
Our wagon's in there, Pink. It's got a cover that flares up 4 or 5 feet front and back. My great-grandfather brought his whole family down to Georgia in it, even his old daddy. His daddy was a blacksmith with 4 forges till he crippled his arm and a missionary to the Indians besides.
Gosh, said Pink, impressed.
I knowed your great-grandpa when I was a boy, said Mr. Lias. General Tweedy was his name. He sure was a fine old man.
When we turned into the swept yard, I noticed for the first time how run down the place looked, almost like white trash lived there. Grandpa Tweedy wasn't white trash. He owned his land. But like all farmers, he had to contend with high taxes, high freight rates, and land so worn out that he might spend more for guano than he could get for his cotton crop. Still and all, he got better terms at the store than most on account of my daddy, and Papa helped him out some with cash money. Times weren't as hard for him as they could be. Grandpa Tweedy was sitting on the porch swatting flies. His pet hen, a white leghorn, clucked with excitement every time the swatter came down. I guess I saw him through Pink's eyes that morning because I was embarrassed all of a sudden. How seedy Grandpa Tweedy looked in ragged overalls, his beard so long and scraggly. While Mr. Lias walked to the back of the buggy to get out the mail, Pink and I went up on the porch. Before we could even say howdy, Grandpa Tweedy hollered to Ms. Jones to put on 2 extra plates for dinner.
"Besides for Mr. Lias?" she called from inside the house.
"Yes'm," he yelled back. "Will's here. And another boy." Then he thundered his gravelly voice at me. "Will, answer me. What is God?"
Without batting an eye, I quoted from the Shorter Catechism in my best Sunday school voice. "God is a spirit, infinite, eternal, and unchangeable." Grandpa Tweedy had been drilling me on the catechism all my life.
"Now, tell me, what is a lie?"
He picked up his swatter off the floor, killed a fly on his arm as he said the word lie, and flipped the fly off for the chicken.
"A lie is an abomination in the sight of God and,
"And a what, boy?"
I knew the answer. I was just debating whether to give it or act smart and show off before Pink. I decided to act smart.
"A lie is an abomination in the sight of God," I repeated, "and a very present help in time of trouble. Ain't that right, Pink?" Before Grandpa could bless me out for being sacrilegious, I told him about getting run over by the train. He said, "There you go, son, tempting the Almighty hisself." Then I stated my business, namely that Papa wanted him to let me use Big Red and Satan in the covered wagon. Some of us boys are going to go camping. Grandpa banged on the arm of his rocking chair.
"What you ought to be doing instead, you ought to be studying the catechism and the Bible. Ain't that right, Lias? You ever see such a smart aleck boy?"
Coming up the porch steps, Mr. Lias grinned and said I was smart aleck all right.
"But he ain't a bad boy, Mr. Tweedy." "Then he must have changed here lately."
"Real respectful," I asked. "Is it all right for us to take the team and the wagon, sir? Papa said you might could spare them."
"I need them mules."
It was like he'd forgot Papa was the one that bought Big Red and Satan in the first place.
"I need them and the wagon both. You know good and well we use that wagon every fourth Sunday to go to Hebron for preaching."
"We'll be back long for time for Hebron, Grandpa."
"Well, anyhow, it ain't all right with me. What y'all gonna go camping for? Why can't you just lay out in some of them woods round Cold Sassy a few days? Or come out here?"
"Time for dinner, y'all," Mrs. Jones called from the door. "How you do, Will? Who's your young friend?" She was a huge fat woman, Grandpa Tweedy's third wife, and I liked her. The reason she was still Mrs. Jones, Grandpa had called her that all the time they were courting, her being a widow woman, and after they got married, he was too lazy to bother changing her name. Granny Blakesley used to laugh about that, and she thought it worth mentioning that Mrs. Jones had kicked Mr. Jones after he was dead. Of course, Mrs. Jones hadn't known he was dead. She just thought he was snoring again. Doc said the snore was the breath gone out for the last time. As we started into dinner, Grandpa Tweedy walked over to the edge of the porch and picked up a conch shell off the banister rail.
"I ordered this one from Savannah," he told Pink and blew a loud blast. "That's to call the hands to dinner," he explained.
We had just sat down to the table when a rumble of colored men's voices suddenly drifted in from the kitchen. It was the field hands coming in to eat.
"Miss Jones, reach back you and shut the kitchen door," said Grandpa Tweedy. "Now, Willie, it just makes me nervous, the idea you taking off in that big wagon. And sure sin, if it ain't here, we'll need it."
I knew he meant somebody might die. The covered wagon was the hearse for anybody who needed one in that part of Banks County. General Tweedy had taken his last ride in it nearly 40 years before, to the Hebron graveyard. His widow, Arminda, my great-grandmother, had gone in it to the same place just a year ago, and also when she died the first time. Before Grandpa Tweedy could say any more about the wagon, Mr. Lias said,
"Y'all heard about Will's other granddaddy getting married last week?"
"Is that a fact?"
said Grandpa, helping his plate.
"Seems like it one morning a week or two ago, Lias, you come in with a message from Hort saying Miss Mattie Lou had died. Rucker sure acts fast."
Mrs. Jones wanted to know who was the bride, who married them, and all about it. Then she asked, "Will, is there any more room in Mr. Blakesley's cemetery plot? Besides for him, I mean. You reckon there's room for this Miss Love in there with him and Miss Mattie Lou?"
"Yes'm," I said, embarrassed. "I think so."
Grandpa Tweedy grinned.
"Miss Jones worries about where I'm going to put her down when the time comes, son. It being the custom, I got to be buried twixt your daddy's mama, Will, and Miss Flo. But Miss Jones don't want to be put at our feet, which is the only other space left."
"That's all right, Mr. Tweedy. I finally figured out a plan," she said, laughing merrily. "Want to hear?" He looked up, suspicious.
"Say it."
"I've decided I want to be put down setting up, setting in a rocking chair with a whole chocolate cake in my lap and a silver fork to eat it with. And naturally it's going to take a heap of room, me being a fairly large woman."
"Ain't no way to bury somebody setting up in no rocking chair."
"Let me finish now. Since there ain't that much room in your lot, I just think I'll sit beside Mr. Jones through eternity. I'm going to ask the family when we go to Hebron next fourth Sunday." It really made Grandpa Tweedy mad. He didn't say another word the whole meal, not even when the cook and Mrs. Jones were clearing the table. But a gleam came in his eye while he was spooning a mound of whipped cream on his blackberry cobbler and he started telling about when he was a boy and went to the mountains with his daddy, General Tweedy.
We was riding horseback, buying up cattle. Camped up there in the Blue Ridge for a week or more, getting maybe 2-3 cows from one farmer and 6 or 7 from another. We drove home 35 head, just me and him. Son, you ain't never seen anything pretty as them big blue Georgie mountains.
The upshot of this remembering was that my grandfather not only went with us to the pasture and watched us catch Big Red and Satan, but got two of his field hands to come help us load the wagon bed with corn, oats, and hay. And all he said as we hitched up was, "Y'all be good now, and come Sunday find you a Presbyterian church to go to, you hear me?" I turned the team into the road, T.R. riding high on the seat between me and Pink.
"Y'all take good care of them mules, Will," Grandpa Tweedy hollered after us. "They's a matched pair, and I'll be in a fix if anything happens to 'em. Be careful, yeah?"
"Yes, sir," I called back as the team broke into a trot. "Don't worry, Grandpa. I know all about handling mules."
Chapter 26. 8 years after our camping trip, I still can't believe how good I told that tale about Aunt Loma nursing a pig, not to mention the one about sticking a pin in her rubber busts. 5 of us boys went to the mountains. Pink, Leroy, Smiley, myself, and, at the last minute, Dunson McCall. His daddy, the school superintendent, had a 2-horse farm near town and bought a lot of seed and fertilizer at the store, so Papa thought it would be a nice thing to do, to invite Dunson along. Dunce kept his nose in a book all the time and couldn't hit a baseball if you hung it on a string in front of his bat. And as the saying goes, he was a lost ball in high weeds when it came to hunting and fishing. But he was all right. We didn't mind having him. Grandpa Blakesley's house was on our way out of Cold Sassy. As we rolled past it, Smiley snickered and said, "How you like your new 2-timing grandma, Will?" I raised the whip and said, "Shut up. If you got to talk like that, you just get out and go on back home. You and anybody else that thinks she's any of their business." I glared at the whole bunch of them. By the time we got out in the country, we were having a high old time, whooping, talking loud, and all like that. If we saw a creakety wagon up ahead full of country folks going to town, I'd cluck the mules to a smart trot, and we'd all wave as we passed them. We knew the big blue-painted covered wagon was something to stare at, and 5 boys off for the mountains was something to envy. I began to forget all about Miss Love and what Cold Sassy must be saying about her kissing another man 2 days after promising to cleave only under Grandpa. I even forgot to hope she knew it was Miss Effie Bell that told on her, not me. Our mothers had packed baskets of food to keep us going. Fried chicken and boiled ham, baked sweet potatoes, peach pickles, big buttermilk biscuits, cookies, cakes, apples, boiled eggs, I don't know what all. We traveled 30 miles that first day and never stopped eating. About 2 o'clock the second day, just past the little town of Clayton in the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains, we took an old logging road into the woods and picked out a site near a little branch. While I fed and watered the mules and staked them out under some trees, the other fellows made camp. We didn't know whose land it was, of course. Just so you didn't set the woods afire and weren't gypsies, nobody minded. You didn't have to ask. Though we counted on getting plenty of fish and wild game, we had a wooden grub box full of staples. Smoked ham, bacon, a bucket of salt mackerel, flour, cornmeal, grits, raw sweet potatoes, lard, coffee, a tin of butter, some store bread, and a can of beaten biscuits that Dunce's mama made. That night we put the box out under a tree to make more room for us to sleep in the wagon. I'd barely closed my eyes good when T.R. went to growling and the mules commenced rearing up and squealing. Boy, howdy, we scrambled out quick to grab those mules. If they'd pulled up their stakes and run away, I'd have never heard the last of it from Grandpa Tweedy. What happened? 2 great big black bears had busted into our grub box. We could see them in the moonlight, eating the ham and those raw sweet potatoes, breaking open cans, scattering coffee and meal, having just the best time you ever saw. Acted like we weren't even there. Smiley got his gun and was fixing to take aim when I stopped him. "How you think we gonna hold the mules if you go to shooting? These ain't hunting mules." He raised the gun anyhow. "I'm telling you, Smiley, I'd rather be hungry than walk home." "You talk about hungry. There's nothing like knowing your grub is off somewhere digesting in a bear to make you feel starved to death." At daybreak, we scavenged in the wreckage of the box, but what hadn't been eaten was mashed into the wet pine needles. All we found was a little damp flour in the bottom of a busted can. In the gloomy, misty gray morning, we grazed on blackberries. That was breakfast. We had blackberries again for dinner. Supper was a boiled goose that Smiley shot on a nearby pond after the sun came out. We had to skin him to get the feathers off, and he was tough, great goodness, despite we boiled him and boiled him and boiled him. But he made a meal, and we thought to skim the goose grease off the top of the water, use it next morning to fry a few middling-sized trout. We ate blackberries off and on all that second morning, which was cold and damp and overcast. I managed to shoot a dove and a rabbit, not much for five boys, and at noon we roasted them on a spit over the fire. We just finished eating when the rain that had threatened all morning blew in over the mountains in heavy black thunderheads. We barely had time to string up some canvas over the mules before the storm hit. Safe in the wagon, we had a fine time for a while, tussling in the hay and talking about girls and all. But as the day wore on with no let-up of rain, we started getting hungry and cold and miserable. We got even more miserable when Leroy noticed that Smiley had left our box of shotgun shells out under a tree. Wet shells meant the end of hunting anything except blackberries and dry wood, which we hadn't thought to collect any real supply of. I was really mad at Smiley. Blueford Jackson wouldn't have been careless about the shotgun shells or the grub box either. And he'd have thought to gather piles of wood when we first got there instead of keeping just enough ahead for the next campfire. I groaned. My throat swelled and ached. Blueford Jackson was 6 feet under, and the camping trip he planned was deader than him. Trying to put some life in the party, so to speak, I sat up and said, "Dunce, I don't think you've heard how my Uncle Johnny hung a cow by mistake." "Oh, shut up, Will," said Leroy. "Dunce has heard it. We all done heard it a million times." He found a blanket and started pulling hay over himself for warmth as the sky got darker. We sat some more, watching the rain drip off the back canvas. When it started down in sheets, I said, "Why don't I tell about raw head and bloody bones?" "How about shut up, Will?" said Smiley. "We get tired of your damn stories." "Don't you cuss me, dern it. Well, shut up, then." There wasn't room in the wagon for a fight. "One time my daddy saw his ancestor who'd been dead 100 years, I said, stubborn. There was a slight stir of interest. Pink thought I meant Papa saw his ancestor's ghost. "No, I mean he saw his actual great-great-dead granddaddy. He was in a brick crypt in an old church graveyard up in North Carolina. When Papa and a cousin of his went over to check on the crypt, so much ivy had grown in through the cracks, you couldn't tell if the vines were holding the bricks together or pushing them apart. So they went in, and there was their great-great-granddaddy. The coffin had rotted to pieces, and his bones were just laying there. Papa said the skull had a hatchet cut on the forehead." "Golly," Pink whispered. "That ain't all. A little girl skeleton was in the crypt, too, in a coffin with a glass top. Her bones were just so white and pretty." "How'd your daddy know it was a girl?" asked Smiley, suspicion that I had made up more of it than I really had. "The bones had on a little white polka-dot dress that hadn't all rotted yet, that's how." The drumming of rain on the canvas was easing up, which was a good thing. It had started to drip through on us, but I hardly noticed. Like an actor whose audience has stood up to clap, I didn't want to quit. And now I knew what bait to use. I said, "I've told y'all about great-grandma Tweety dying twice. The first time you remember she jumped out of the coffin just before they were fixing to nail the lid? The second time she stayed dead. But what I thought might interest y'all right now, she rode to the Hebron Cemetery both times in this very wagon." I knocked on the side of it. The hollow wooden sound like the busted Pink and Leroy clear out of the hay. "Did you see her die, Will, either time?" Dunce asked in a hushed voice. "No, but last summer they'd just pulled the sheet over her head when me and my family got out home. And I went in there where she was at." Smiley gasped. "I wouldn't have gone in there," he admitted. "Me neither," said Dunce. "I never been that close to a dead person." "A old colored woman was sitting with the body. She said, 'Want to see your granny, boy?' I shook my head, but she said, 'Miss Mindy ain't going to hurt you.' And she pulled that sheet back. Grandma was propped up on pillars. What little hair she had was damp and standing out like a scared cat's. Her mouth had dropped open, and her eyes stared straight at me. I could have killed that nigger woman showing off like that trying to scare me. I backed out of that room, I tell you. Miss Jones and Mama laid Grandma out, fixed her mouth shut with a handkerchief tied under her chin and over her head. Papa helped my uncles finish making the coffin, and soon as the preacher came, we ate dinner quick and set out for Hebron, it being a hot day and her not embalmed or anything. And like I said, they carried her to the graveyard in this very wagon here. Used those same mules out yonder, Big Red and Satan. All the way to Hebron, Mary Toy complained about us having to miss the Ringling Brothers Circus over in Athens. Every time we had to walk up a hill to save the horses, she'd say, why couldn't Grandma have died last week? It gave us the creep sitting there in that hearse. It was pitch-black dark before the rain finally drizzled away and the moon came out. Wispy clouds scurried across the sky like little ghosts. I said maybe there was enough dry wood under the wagon to build a fire with. The fire warmed us some after we finally got it going, but it didn't cheer anybody up. I wish we had some good old hot buttered arsh potatoes, said Leroy. Every now and again somebody would say, I ain't scared of no old dead woman, or, is all that so, Will? Once Pink went shush and whispered, y'all hear that? I thought I heard something over by the wagon. Just the wind, I said airily, holding a twig in the fire till it got red hot on the end, like a long cigar. I waved it in circles a while, thinking what I could tell next. Pink got up off his log and turned his back to the fire. As we sat listening to the katydids, singing loud as they came out into the wetness, the moon lit up a layer of fog below us. Blue Jackson is dead, I thought bitterly. Granny Blakesley is dead. And reckon what has happened by now with Grandpa and Miss Love. I wanted to go home. Dunce was like-minded. I'm sick of this darn camp out, he groaned. I'm hungry and I'm cold. Huddled in a blanket, he kicked at a log on the fire. It sent up sparks. The flaring of light made big shadows dance on the wet gray canvas of the hearse. Suddenly, it didn't make any sense at all to stay on here till next week, when all we had to do was leave. I said as much, and the faces lit by the campfire grinned with relief. So it was decided. We would set out for Cousin Jake's place early in the morning and get Miss Love's racehorse. Not a one of the boys would sleep in or under the wagon that night, despite the ground was wet as heck. I'd counted on that. I was going to have a bed of hay all to myself. But as I put one foot up on the axle to climb in, I decided I might as well stay out with the fellas instead. That night, Bluford Jackson came to me in a dream. He didn't look dead, but said he was. Said he was damaged goods in the worst way. He wanted me to tell Emily Crutchfield to let him sit by her at preaching next Sunday and please to save a space for him in her family pew. How big a space do you take now, Blue? Same as before, or just an inch or two? He didn't answer that. Just said he'd need Sunday clothes, and would I find him some and leave them in the crotch of the maple tree in his backyard. What you need clothes for, Blue? If you went to church naked as a jaybird, nobody'd know it. Ain't that the least you can do for me, Will, considering it was your firecrackers? That made me mad, but he kept talking. Will, I got lots of time now. If you want to be a doctor, when you get to medical school, you can make room for me in your seat, and I'll help you with your lessons and all. I'm not going to be a doctor. You the one was going to be a doctor. I'm going farm. I can't live your life for you, Blue. Then I woke up, frightened and shivering from the cold. I didn't tell my dream to the fellas, but weeks later I told it to Grandpa Blakesley. I said, Grandpa, it was like Blue didn't believe he was dead. Like he don't know what being dead means, for gosh sake. Grandpa studied on it a minute and said, I think it's you that don't believe he's dead, son. I think it's you that don't know what being dead means. But who does? Only them as has passed on. Cousin Rachel was almost as big and fat as Mrs. Jones and said she could spot hungry boys a mile away. She and Cousin Jake had already eaten, but her cook made us some big graham biscuits and fried half a ham, looked like, and a bunch of eggs and put a gallon of milk on the table. The cook, having heard about our bears, said this blessing. Lord, help us and feed us, and keep our enemies from us, 'cause some will come upon us and take our rations from us. Amen. We ate it all. Miss Love's horse turned out to be a tall, prancy black gelding with a star on his forehead. With him tied behind the wagon on a lead rope, head held proud and high, we felt mighty fancy on the down-go to Cold Sassy, and we made mighty good time. The mules knew they were headed home. We did lots of talking about whether or not Miss Love could train him. And then for the first time since we left Cold Sassy, the boys got to talking about her and Grandpa. Smiley started it. He said his mother thought Miss Love must have money, and that's why Mr. Blakesley married her. My grandmother always did think the reason Mr. Blakesley married Miss Mattie Lou was 'cause her daddy owned all that land. That really made me mad.
Shut up!
Miss Mattie Lou was an old maid, wasn't she? Why would anybody marry an old maid except for land or money?
I said shut up, I yelled.
Yeah, shut up, Smiley, said Dunce. It ain't right to talk like that about the dead. But they couldn't let go of the subject, and the more they got my goat, the worse things they said, especially about Miss Love. Things like, hey, Will, how long you think they've been sweet on one another? And you reckon Miss Love's too old to have babies? They ain't planning to have babies, I bust out furious. Grandpa and Miss Love have a business arrangement. What do you mean by that? Leroy asked with a smirk. I mean Miss Love is sleeping in the company room, I said. She's just living down there to keep house. I don't believe it. Well, it's so. Says who? Says her, she told me. Ha, since when have ladies started saying such as that to a boy? Shoot, dog. Then Smiley crowded up close behind the driver's seat to talk ugly about the rich-looking stranger from Texas. I heard he tore her clothes as half off before he got done kissing her. Well, he didn't. I was really mad now, and I ought to know I was there. The boys took to making up jokes then, saying things you wouldn't want said about your grandpa's wife even if you hated her. I decided to change the subject. I swear I didn't know when I opened my mouth that I would say what I said, but it changed the subject all right. Y'all want to hear about Aunt Loma nursing a pig? You mean Campbell Jr.? Asked Pink Predmore. I ain't talking about the baby. We had started down a steep hill. Slow down, Big Red. Whoa, Satan! Leroy, push hard on the brake post. The wagon's going to run over the team. Careening downhill, bumping over rocks and dried mud holes, we like to shook apart before we got the darn wagon under control. Did you say Miss Loma nursed a pig? Pink asked as soon as he was able. You mean she put a pig up to her tits and let it suck? Asked Smiley. If Miss Loma did that, she must be crazy, said Dunce. Anyhow, Will, how would you know it? I didn't, of course. One time I overheard Mama and Aunt Loma talking about a distant cousin over in Athens that did it to keep her milk going while her baby was in the hospital, but I just made up that it was Aunt Loma. Well, you know Campbell Jr. was born little, I began thinking fast. I mean, he didn't weigh more than a frying-sized chicken, born early. Funny, I don't recollect him ever being little bitty, said Leroy. Well, he was. To keep him warm, they had to put him in a pasteboard box with hot water bottles wrapped in towels all around him. That part was true. You just couldn't get Aunt Loma's house warm in winter. The rest I made up as I went along. He was too weak to suck good, so Mama showed Aunt Loma how to milk herself, and they gave it to him with the eyedropper. But seems like she never really had full bags, not enough milk to feed a jaybird, and the baby being such a sorry sucker, they were scared she'd go dry. We were moving up the hill now, the mules straining forward. I flipped their rumps with the whip. Get to the pig, Fat Leroy said impatiently. Tell us about the pig. Well, my daddy finally got on the telephone and rung up a hospital doctor over in Athens and asked what to do. It was the doctor said get a pig. Nah. The boys said nah like there was just one voice for the four of them. Yeah. The doc said a pig would really get her milk on. I don't believe any lady would nurse a pig, said Dunce. Not even your Aunt Loma. You can't believe it or not, it's so, said I. And at the moment I half believed it myself. They sent me out to Grandpa Tweedy's in the buggy to get one. His Poland China Sour just whelped a new litter. I got the runniest and took it home in a box. Mama bathed it and wrapped it up in a blue blanket and took it into Aunt Loma. Mama couldn't stand the sight, that little pig grunting and pushing, but I heard her tell Papa that Loma said it felt real good. You know how if a cow ain't stripped proper, she gets a swollen bag and sore tits? Well, Aunt Loma had been hurting a lot, besides worrying about the baby starving to death. She nursed that pig a week or more, I don't remember how long. If the pig was nursing her, asked Pink, doubting, what was happening to Campbell Jr.? I thought fast. The way it worked, I said, Aunt Loma would let the baby nurse her a few minutes, then she'd milk herself into a bottle. Then while Mama went to work feeding Campbell Jr. with her eyedropper, Granny would wrap the pig up and take it into Aunt Loma to get her stripped good. After that, I or Mary Toy, one, had to take the pig and feed it some cow's milk with a baby bottle so it wouldn't starve to death.
We had a 3-ring circus going there for a while.
What happened to the pig? Asked Leroy as we crested a hill.
Granny cooked him. Taste all right?
Nobody could eat him, said I. But from then on, Campbell Jr. got fatter and fatter, and it's all on account of Aunt Loma having so much milk from getting started good with that pig.
How come nobody's heard all this till now? Pink said after a while.
He had laid down back there in the hay.
I can't figure you knowing something that good, Will, and keeping it to yourself.
Papa said I couldn't go fishing for a year if I told it, I lied. Which reminds me, don't y'all tell it, or what I said about Miss Love and Grandpa either. All of a sudden I was real worried about what Miss Love would think if she heard it, but they all crossed their hearts and hoped to die.
It was really something to make up an outlandish story like that. I thought up another one right off, but needing a little time to work it out, all I said was, maybe I'll tell you all about Aunt Loma and the rubber busts.
The rubber what? Asked Smiley.
Aunt Loma's rubber bust set that she bought for her wedding, but you all got to promise not to repeat it.
They like to fell out of the wagon promising, but I said let's wait till we stop to eat. Right off, Leroy commenced saying how hungry he was, though it was only 10 o'clock.
Me too, said Dunce. I'm starved. Wonder what Miss Rachel put in the basket.
We soon saw an old wagon road that led up to a lonesome chimney and onto a shady creek. As we turned off the highway, I said, I'll tell y'all just one fact that's important to the story. Until Campbell Jr. was on the way, Aunt Loma was flat as a batter cake, so to speak. Before she got married, Grandpa used to say he never could find a towel. Loma was always making herself a bosom or a bustle one. First we had to tend to the mules and Miss Love's racehorse. Then while Dunce pulled out Cousin Rachel's basket, I got shed of my clothes and jumped in the creek. I was hot, for one thing, and also I'd been remembering a floating trick Blue Jackson told me about last fall. He said you won't sink if you stretch your arms out on the water like Jesus Christ crucified, or like 10 minutes to 2 on a clock. Well, it worked, by gosh. I felt like I was on a mattress. When I made my body straight and stiff, even my toes rose out of the water.
Bet can't any of y'all float this good, I yelled.
They all took off their clothes, waded in, and laid down on the water, but their feet and legs sank straight down as usual. It made Smiley mad.
You just laying in shallows, Will. You ain't floating.
I am, too. It's deep here. Come feel. And he did, whooshing his arm under my back to make sure. I rocked like a boat, my toes still sticking out of the water.
You ain't never floated like that before, said Pink, still suspicious.
I tried making a pillow out of my hands, putting them under the back of my head, and that worked even better. Closing my eyes, I could have gone to sleep if the boys hadn't pounced on me and sent me under. Without bothering to put on clothes, we opened up Cousin Rachel's picnic and ate, sitting on the mossy creek bank with our feet cooling in the water. When I finished, I lay back, feet still in the water, and said, now I'm going to tell about Aunt Loma and the rubber busts.
Well, when Aunt Loma was going to get married, I began, she ordered her this rubber bust set from Sears and Roebuck, but she couldn't get them blowed up. It was nearly time for the wedding, and she couldn't get the bicycle pump to work, so she asked me to do it.
I sat up, splashing my feet in the cool water.
Said she'd pay me a dollar. Also said she'd kill me if I told anybody.
"'Specially us, Haw," said Pink, raising on one elbow to chuck a rock at a hickory-nut tree.
Well, so I blowed him up. But then I took a needle and stuck this itty-bitty hole in the left bust. It went psst all through the wedding, and Aunt Loma had a flat by the last I do. You never in your life saw a bride as mad as her, or one holding her bouquet as high up.
She yell at you, Will? Pink asked, grinning.
She couldn't. The preacher was still marrying him. But boy, howdy, she shot me a look. She was so mad that when Uncle Camp had trouble pushing the ring on her finger, she jerked her hand away and put it on herself. Uncle Camp is sort of a mouse, you know. When Aunt Loma fusses, he looks pitiful and says, I'm sorry, Loma, baby.
After they were man and wife, I heard him whisper, Loma, baby, what did I do? We all guffawed and hawed. As you can imagine, I added, I stayed out of the way till they got on the train to Tallulah Falls. I didn't say so to the boys, but Aunt Loma thought Camp had made reservations at a nice honeymoon hotel, whereas he planned on staying with his aunt. He said they could go see the falls just as good from her house as from the hotel, and a whole lot cheaper. It turned out his aunt was a widow woman with 10 children, living in a nasty run-down old cabin on a turkey farm where you couldn't get to the privy without stepping in turkey mess. Aunt Loma stayed 10 minutes and, holding her nose, said she was taking the next train home.
Before they left town, though, she dressed up in her first day outfit and got a street photographer to snap a honeymoon picture of her and Camp smiling at each other in front of the biggest hotel in Tallulah Falls. But when the picture finally came in the mail, it wasn't her and Uncle Camp. It was another couple. Getting mixed up by the photographer seemed to be the last straw. Aunt Loma was not only mad at Camp, she was furious at Granny and Grandpa for not forbidding the marriage. And now that she was stuck with it, she was mad at Mama for having married so much better than her. Despite Camp had grown up in a tenant shack, she thought he knew what was meant by coming up in the world. Now she knew he didn't. Chapter 27. We rolled into Cold Sassy about 5 o'clock that Saturday evening. As we neared my house, I said real solemn, "Now, if you all tell about the pig or the bust," said, "I'll catch heck." As if it was a casual afterthought, I added, "And don't tell your folks about Miss Love staying in the company room at Grandpa's house, because if you do..." I glared at Pink on the seat beside me, holding the brake post, and then at the others lolling back there in the hay. "Because if you do," I repeated, and they knew I meant it, "I'll make up something and tell it on y'all, if you know what I mean." They hoped to die first. With my threat hanging over their heads, I trusted them all the time we unhitched and tended the mules, turning them out into Papa's pasture for the night. I trusted them while Queenie praised and patted the black gelding, which Mama wouldn't even look at. Mama hovered around, asking why did we come back so soon, and how was Cud and Rachel and them? Did we have a good time and stay cool? Were we warm enough at night, and did we have enough to eat? But she didn't ask one thing about the gelding. I still trusted the boys when we all marched down to Grandpa's house, proudly leading the prancy horse to Miss Love, and helped her put him in a stall. When we were leaving, she took my hand and said, "Will, he's just beautiful. Mr. Beautiful, that's what I'll name him. Thank you so much, thank you." All the time we were unloading the covered wagon, I believed the boys wouldn't tell on me. I still believed it while I took a bath. But about time I sat down to eat, it came to me with a sinking feeling that probably everything I'd said was being repeated right now all over town. I wasn't too worried about Aunt Loma. Those were whacking good stories, if I do say so myself. And everybody would know they were made up. I'd made up things before. Anyhow, it would be worth a whipping to see Aunt Loma's face after she heard. What made my stomach sink was knowing I had betrayed Miss Love. Folks would already be sniggering about those separate rooms. It was a strange thing to me that the same people who condemned her on her wedding day for taking advantage of an old man's loneliness would be condemning her now, just 10 days later, for denying Grandpa his rights. We were hardly through supper before here came Miss Sarah Gordy saying I ought to be ashamed. Mr. French being Granny's stepbrother, his wife felt like they were kin and had a right to speak up in the family. After blessing me out, she took Mama in the house to tell her in private what all Mrs. Snodgrass and Smiley said I said. As they came out, Mama was nodding in agreement. "You're absolutely right, Miss Sarah. This time Will has gone too far." After Miss Gordy left, Mama made me go to my room while she told Papa what Miss Sarah said Mrs. Snodgrass and Smiley said I said. Mama's furious voice drifted up from the porch, and pretty soon Papa came to the bottom of the stairs and hollered for me to get down there. He was already taking off his belt when I came out my door. After the whipping, Papa said, "Son, we gonna go out to the barn, you and me. I think it's time I told you a few things." Boy, howdy, at last. But it was just another lecture about respecting ladies. "It's not fitting to make jokes about a woman's, womanhood," Papa began, looking stern. "If you got to show off before a bunch of boys by making up tales about a woman's..." He sputtered, unable to say the word. "Well, if you gotta make up a story, Will, for heaven's sake, don't pin it on anybody that anybody knows." All in all, I came out about even on Aunt Loma that night. One beating and one lecture was about right for two good stories that would be told for a long time by old men playing checkers under the Cold Sassy tree at the depot. If Aunt Loma was mad, which she would be, that suited me just fine. The next day at Sunday dinner, Papa had hardly finished serving the baked hen when my mother said, real pleasant, "I wonder who played the piano for the Methodists today." "Miss Effie Bell," said Aunt Loma. Picking a curly red hair out of her sweet potato souffle, she dropped it daintily to the floor. "They say there were lots of wrong notes and she played pretty slow, but they got by. We'll start the gravy, don't just let it sit there." Scared Aunt Loma might switch from Miss Effie Bell's piano playing to my camping trip, I asked, "Why didn't Miss Love play?"
She wasn't there. That's one reason. Aunt Loma sounded like she'd just been weaned on a lemon. Mama said maybe Love went to the Baptist church with Grandpa. If they came, I didn't see him. Did you see him, Camp? I said maybe Miss Love is sick.
She's sick all right, answered Aunt Loma, talking around a bite of chicken. After 2 years of showing off at the piano, your Miss Love has found out the Methodists can do without her. A committee of ladies went calling on her last week, Will, to let our new Miss Blakesley know that a married woman is expected to behave herself.
It wasn't like that, protested Papa. The ladies just told her they didn't need her to play for preaching anymore, Aunt Loma said, looking smug. She tried to act like it didn't matter, but I bet after they left she threw things and cried her eyes out.
Loma, you listen here, Papa said sternly.
Don't worry so, Brother Hoyt. What we're saying is in the bosom of the family.
She looked straight at me then. Unless Will here decides to tell it on his next camping trip. Just by the way Papa jabbed his spoon in the sugar dish, I knew something was coming. But he stirred his coffee good and put the spoon down before exploding.
I don't know why you're so happy about all that, Loma. Your pa sure ain't. Now I want you and Mary Willis both to hush up talking about her.
You can't make the whole town hush up, Brother Hoyt.
Well, y'all don't have to join in. What's done is done, and we gonna live with it and be nice. I knew and they knew he was saying we got to remember which side our bread is buttered on down at the store and who is buttering it.
Brother Hoyt's right, Loma, baby, Uncle Camp said boldly. We need to all shut up, Camp, and pass my coffee cup to Sister. I just want a half cup, Sister. Brother Hoyt, Love is the one you ought to say hush to. After her tirade down at the store last week, how can you think it's just me and Sister keeping the town talking? It's mostly her.
Your daddy don't see it that way, said Papa. He says Miss Love's been tarred and feathered for what ain't nobody's business but his and hers.
I was dying to ask what Miss Love said at the store, but I didn't dare. Nobody spoke the rest of the meal except to say the gravy sure is good and please pass the muscadine jelly. Mainly to get out of Aunt Loma's way before she could catch me alone and fuss about the rubber busts and all, I hurried to the pasture right after dinner. Papa wanted me to get the team and the wagon back to Banks County. Just as I was backing the mules into place on either side of the wagon tongue, here came trouble in the form of Grandpa Blakesley. Seeing him with short hair and without that big droopy mustache and bushy gray beard, I was surprised all over again. I swear my granddaddy didn't look more than 8 or 10 years older than my daddy. It was the expression on his face that made me uneasy and the sharp edge on his voice.
You fixing to take that rig back out to the country? He asked.
Yes, sir. I kept my eyes on the strap I was buckling. The leather was still damp from yesterday's mule sweat. Grandpa didn't speak again for a minute. Then he said,
Your daddy says you're going to stop by Temp's place on the way back and see Mary Toy.
Yes, sir. While I hooked the traces, Grandpa asked, did my mother change her mind yet about going to New York?
No, sir, not as I know of. Move over, Red.
As I fastened the last strap, out there in the hot sun with the mules snorting and stomping and twitching off green flies, he finally said it. Will Tweedy, I'm plumb ashamed of you. I didn't have to ask why. I just stood there wondering who told him what I said about Miss Love taking over the company room. I even wondered how it was phrased to him.
Grandpa, I was just trying to...
I ain't interested in what you was trying to do. What you done was bad enough. You done made a laughing stock out of Loma again.
Loma? Grandpa was mad about what I told on Aunt Loma?
Now she does bring a lot on herself, he was saying. Loma's so hateful sometimes I'm sorry to have to claim her. But you don't make her no nicer by outsmarting her every few days or making fun of her. Them stories you told ain't so, and ain't fitten to be told on no lady. Loma may be hateful, but she lives decent, and you ain't gonna talk about her like that no more.
He spat his tobacco juice close to Big Red's front hoofs.
You hear me?
Yes, sir.
I felt about as low as O.K. Dunbar crawling home drunk at midnight. I couldn't honestly say I was sorry, but I hung my head. I figured Grandpa would turn then and stalk off, but he didn't. After ordering me in no uncertain terms to apologize to Aunt Loma, he put his arm around my shoulders.
I sure want to hear about that camping trip, he said with a rough tenderness in his voice. I felt like the sun had just come out.
We had us a swell time, Grandpa.
There wasn't any use saying otherwise. It's bad enough to be miserable on a camping trip without telling the world. Lighthearted now, I put one foot on the wagon axle, whistled for TR, and swung myself to the driver's seat. The dog jumped up there beside me, landing so hard, zomp, he liked to knock me over.
Old TR knows you better be getting on if you're going to be home before dark, said Grandpa.
Then, squinting up at me, he went to talking like I had all day long.
We held church up at the house this morning.
Sir?
I was a preacher, Miss Love was a piano player, and the both of us made up the congregation. It was a real nice service.
He enjoyed seeing I was confused.
Wish you'd have been there, son. We sang us some hymns, after which I talked to the Lord a while, telling him about the week, and then I preached a sermon. Tell you the truth, I think I upset Miss Love.
Sir?
I didn't have no words thought out, you know, so I just commenced saying things I'd been a-thinking on lately, about the virgin birth and resurrection and all like that. I said, don't any of them things matter? Well, Miss Love liked to had a fit. Said she wa'n't raised to think like that. I said I wa'n't neither, but that didn't keep me from thinking. And I asked her, do Methodists interrupt and argue with the preacher, or do they sit and listen to what he's got to say?
Gosh, Grandpa, you mean you don't think Jesus rose from the dead?
I'm a-saying that did he or didn't he ain't important, son. What's important is that when the Spirit of Jesus Christ come down on them disciples later, they quit setting around a-moaning and a-trembling and got to work. They weren't scared no more, and the words they spoke had fire in them. Compared to a miracle like that, Jesus rolling back a dang rock and flying off to heaven ain't nothing.
What did Miss Love say to that, Grandpa?
I was real excited.
Nothing. I didn't let her interrupt me again. I said that same miracle is still a-happening, right here in Cold Sassy, in July of 1906. A crippled person or invalid, or the meanest thief or the most despairing misfit, why, if and he can catch a hold of the Spirit of Jesus Christ, he can quit being scared and be like rising up from the dead. Once his soul gets cured, no matter what his body's like, why, he can start a new life. Well, next I preached about the virgin birth. To my thinking, the birth ain't the dang miracle. It's the fact that a boy like Jesus was born to a mama who could leave him be. Well, and then I talked to Miss Love about eternal life. As you know, son, just believing we're going to live forever in the next world don't make it so, or not so.
I felt awful. Grandpa, you don't think Granny's gone to heaven? She ain't up there waiting on us to come?
I like to think so, son. If and there is a heaven, she's up there, I know that, he said softly.
Then he laughed and slapped his hand on Satan's rump.
Ain't but one way to find out if she is or ain't, though, and I'm not that curious.
He sighed, spat, and said, having faith means it's all right either way, son. The Lord is my shepherd means I trust him. Whatever happens in this life or the next, and even if there ain't a life after this one, God planned it. So why wouldn't it be all right? He looked dead serious, then all of a sudden laughed again.
You know, if and I was a real preacher, Will Tweedy, wouldn't nobody come to my church?
I would, Grandpa.
Well, I ain't sure about Miss Love. She was expecting the Lord to strike me down this morning. When I finished preaching, she brought in some lemonade and pound cake, and I said it was the best Lord's Supper I ever ate. And she didn't like my saying that one bit, said it was blasphemy. When I wanted to sing some barbershop harmony, she called it sacrilegious being Sunday. But finally I got her going on the piano, and we had us a real good time. Every church ought to do that. Give God a good time instead of poor mouthing and always be asking him to save us from temptation and suffering and death. If and you live, Will Tweedy, you gonna be tempted, and you gonna suffer, and you gonna die. Ain't no way out of it. But with the Lord's help, you can stand up to temptation and live through the bad times and look death in the eye. You remember what I say, son?
Yes, sir. But I'd still like to hear you explain Jesus saying ask God for something and you'll get it. One time I prayed for $1 million to test him and didn't get one dime.
That was just wishing. It weren't praying.
T.R. had long since jumped down to chase something, and the mules were restless, but I liked being with Grandpa like this, just him and me. I didn't want him to quit talking.
Did Miss Love think it up? I mean, having preaching at home?
No, son, I did. I expect you heard about them Methodist ladies coming to see her last week.
Yes, sir.
Figured you would. His tone was hard. Miss Love was the maddest white woman you ever saw about that. She come down to the store an hour or so later and blessed out the whole dang town. Then yesterday she got an unsigned letter in the mail. Well, it wa'n't a letter, just an old newspaper clipping about fallen women. It said things like, a female by one transgression forfeits her place in society forever. Miss Love cried all night last night. Poor Miss Love. This morning she put on her Sunday clothes, but then she got to crying and carrying on again. I said to her, Miss Love, why don't you stay home? She said, I can't. They'll know I care. So I put it to her plain. Miss Love, what good's it gonna do, mad as you are? If and don't nobody speak to you or sit by you, you just gonna be mad all over again. We got a pie, Anna. Let's have preaching right here, just you and me. Well, son, we had a heap better time than the dang Methodists, I gall guarantee you. I understand Miss Effie Bell played for them today. She's worse than your granny for losing the place. Grinning, he smoothed his pencil mustache with one finger. I made dang sure Miss Effie Bell got an earful when she got home. I said, the Lord loves a joyful noise, Miss Love, and here comes Miss Effie Bell up her walk. I want you to play ta-ra-ra-boom-dee and rattle the rafters. Then she can tell it all over town how we desecrated the Sabbath. And son, Miss Love was mad enough to do it. The sound like to knock Miss Effie Bell over. Well, I reckon you really had best get started. I bet Miss Love's bosom really bounced while she rattled the rafters. I wonder if Grandpa noticed. No, he wouldn't. Miss Love's already a plumb fool about that horse, son, he said then. Come up home tomorrow sometime, here, and see can you help her with him. Yes, sir, I said, but I wasn't happy about it. I didn't know if I could face her. As the wagon rolled into the street, I thought how Granny would have enjoyed their preaching service. If it could have been the three of them, I mean. Granny used to strike as many wrong keys on the piano as Miss Effie Bell, and she'd sing while she played, holding on to each note with her voice till she could find the next one with her fingers. As far as I know, she and Grandpa never sang together, just the two of them. But whenever Miss Love came for a family dinner, Grandpa would ask her to play hymns, and we'd all sing, and nobody enjoyed it more than Granny. One thing I knew as the mules pulled out into South Main, I was not going to apologize to Aunt Loma. I'd just have to owe her one. Turning onto the Banks County Road, I was thinking what a difference a week can make. Before we went to the mountains, I felt sure Miss Love would tell me everything that happened while I was gone. I even planned to ask her, did Grandpa find out about her kissing Mr. McAllister? But now I didn't think she'd ever tell me anything personal again. Even if she did, I wouldn't know what to say to her, or what not to say, or how not to say it, because now she wouldn't trust me. "Giddy up there," I yelled, reaching for the whip. "I ain't got all day, dern you. Get up, Red. Get up, Satan." As we rattled toward the Banks County line, what really puzzled me was how come Grandpa blessed me out about Aunt Loma, but didn't say pea turkey about my discussing him and Miss Love with a bunch of snotty boys. Gosh, it must be he hadn't heard. Folks would snigger behind Grandpa's back, but not many would dare repeat it to his face. They knew that hard fist. I didn't find out till night that Miss Love sleeping in the company room just wasn't news anymore. While us boys were up in the mountains getting our food snatched by bears and cooking our goose and all, she had announced it herself. Chapter 28. I'm beginning to hate her with a passion, Mama said, and I hadn't a doubt who she was talking about. Papa was still down at the church making up his treasurer's report, so it was just Mama and me out there on the veranda in the dark trying to get cool. I was bone tired, not from walking the 10 miles from Grandpa Tweedy's farm. That wasn't anything. It was from the camping trip. It had finally caught up with me. At the Sunday night preaching, my eyelids had been like heavy little windows flipping open and shut. With me sitting on the swing and Mama in the tall porch rocker, she launched into a tirade about desecration of the Sabbath. "That woman and your granddaddy were singing dance songs at church time this morning, Will. Miss Effie Bell heard them. Anybody who don't know or care if it's Sunday has to be common as pig's tracks." "Grandpa ain't common, Mama." I didn't dare say Miss Love wasn't common. "It ain't him, it's her. He never did such a thing when Ma was alive, and you know it." "Grandpa said they were having church," I told her. "Just him and her mama in the parlor. He prayed and preached a sermon, and they sang hymns and all." "Oh, shaw, you call Tarara Boom D.A. a hymn?"
That was after Mama. They had church first.
Her chair stopped rocking.
How you know so much? He told me all about it.
I slapped at a mosquito, and the chains at the top of the swing jangled. Mama rocked fast for a minute, then stopped dead.
Speaking of common, did he tell you about Miss Love having a fuss with Miss Predmore down at the store last week?
Well, he mentioned it in passing.
And so she told me. I knew she hoped it would make me quit taking up for Miss Love Simpson.
Miss Predmore was on the Methodist committee about the piano playing, Mama began.
After they called on her, Miss Predmore stopped by Pa's store and was picking out some piece goods, when here came Miss Love, hair done up fancy and dressed to the nines in a red dress and a straw hat with big red flowers on it.
Mama's fan was just a-going.
Imagine wearing a red dress in public when the family's in mourning.
Folks had criticized Miss Love the week before for wearing black as if she was grieving for Granny. Now she was awful to wear red. As Mrs. Predmore told it to Mama, and she told it to me that night on the veranda, Miss Love had flounced into the store like she owned it. She came in smiling big at two farmers who wanted Papa to extend credit for a new mule, and then greeted Mr. Craddock Flournoy, who was complaining of indigestion. Just as Camp walked in, carrying a glass of water clouded with baking soda for Mr. Flournoy, Miss Love spied Mrs. Predmore back near the millinery table, looking through bolts of cloth.
"Good morning, Mrs. Predmore," she called, smiling her big wide-mouth smile as if Mrs. P. was her best friend and like she hadn't seen her in a week. Naturally, Mrs. P. didn't speak or smile back. Fixing her mouth like saying prune, she just went on studying the piece goods. But Mr. Flournoy, always the gentleman, lifted his glass of soda water in greeting and, as Mrs. Predmore reported later, spoke to that hussy like she was a queen or something. Hitched up his pants over that big belly and practically bowed to her. Said, "Morning, Miss Blakesley, how's the bride?"
"Fine, sir, but, I have decided not to use Mr. Blakesley's name, Mr. Flournoy," said the bride, speaking pleasant but formal and loud enough to be heard in the piece goods department. "Of course, that is now my legal title, but for personal reasons I prefer to be addressed in the usual way."
While Mr. Flournoy and everybody else, including Grandpa, stared at her, she flashed them all a great big nervous smile. Grandpa was standing behind the counter, his one hand resting on the cast-iron string holder. Miss Love turned to him and said in a flirty voice,
"Mr. Blakesley, don't you agree it's not appropriate for me to be called Mrs. Blakesley?"
A funny look came on Grandpa's face. Everybody could tell he was surprised, but he just shrugged his shoulders and laughed. "If you say so, Miss Love." Then he changed the subject. "I reckon you need some help with your millinery stuff. Camp, go get some of them clean pasteboard boxes for our Miss Simpson here." There wasn't much conversation in the store while Miss Love gathered up her hat-making gewgaws. The way she threw things in the boxes, though, it began to dawn on everybody that, underneath a smile, Miss Love was boiling mad. Mrs. Predmore knew why, of course. The others could only guess. When Miss Love and Uncle Camp went out to load boxes in the buggy, Mrs. P. put in her 2 cents worth about a wife not using her husband's name. She thought Grandpa would welcome her opinion, but he just laughed, acted like the whole thing was a big joke. "I look at it like this, Thelma," he was saying when Miss Love came back in. "Long as she cooks good and ain't aggravating, I don't really care what she calls herself. Ain't that how you see it, Hoyt?" Papa was embarrassed and didn't know what to say. Miss Love didn't seem to notice.
"Too brazen to even blush," Mrs. Predmore told Mama.
But a storm was brewing inside Miss Love. I figured later she was mad not only about the church piano stool being jerked out from under her, but about her whole life, having a drunkard for a daddy, getting jilted by Mr. McAllister, and being looked on in cold sassy as a Yankee outsider. Still and all, she might not have gone as far as she went if Mrs. Predmore hadn't stalked over to Grandpa and let out exactly what she thought of him and her both.
"Mr. Blakesley, y'all ain't got no respect for the family or for this community, either one. It ain't decent marrying the way y'all done, with Miss Mattie Lou just barely dead."
It was like the smile on Grandpa's face dropped right off on the floor. "Don't you bring up Miss Mattie Lou, Thelma," he banged his fist on the counter. "And don't preach at me or Miss Love either."
Miss Love said, "For your information, Miss Thelma, we aren't indecently married. We aren't married at all."
Given her time to gasp, she added, "Except legally."
"'Now, ladies, ladies,' sputtered Mr. Flournoy.
Miss Love didn't even hear him. With her chin in the air, she said, "'I keep house for Mr. Blakesley, and that's all. In case you don't get my meaning, I'll say it plain. I'm sleeping in Mrs. Blakesley's company room. It is not my plan to take her name or her place, except to cook and wash for Mr. Blakesley and keep the—'
"'Shut up, Miss Love,' ordered Grandpa.
She blazed out, "'Don't you ever say shut up to me.'
"'It ain't nobody else's business.'
He was furious. "'I'll hush when everybody quits talking about me, and that won't happen till there's nothing else anybody can wonder about. Now, Miss Thelma?'
She drew a deep breath and spoke like her words were sorghum syrup.
"'Be sure and repeat everything I've said. Tell it all over town, but do try to keep the facts straight.'
During all this, the two farmers pretended to be looking at some hardware, and Mr. Flournoy kept waving his hands and saying, "'Now, ladies, now, ladies!' And Mrs. P. kept dumping insults like she was emptying slop jars.
"'Love, Simpson, you don't make no more sense than a chicken with its head cut off. If you're just company, like you say, and don't even want Mr. Blakesley's name, how come you bothered to get married? I hear that up where you come from, lots of white servants stay with the family they work for.'
Grandpa banged his fist again and yelled, "'Thelma, you get out of my store!'
"'I'm getting,' she shouted, "'and I ain't coming back neither.' Miss Love called, "'Miss Thelma, let me say one thing more. I ain't listening, it's trashy talk. Don't you want to know what I'll get out of this arrangement?'
Her voice was impudent, but Papa told Mama she looked tired and her lips trembled. Papa said he felt sorry for her right then. As Mrs. P. paused near the door, Miss Love said,
"'Wait a minute, and I'll tell you.'
"'Shut up, Miss Love,' Grandpa demanded again.
"'I know what you gettin',' Mrs. Predmore retorted. "'You saving yourself from going single file all your life and having Miss on your tombstone. But being a wife in name only and not even using the name, well, you really still just a old maid, ain't you?' "'He has deeded me the house,' said Miss Love.
It took a few seconds for that to soak in. Mrs. Predmore put one foot out the door and said,
"'Well, call you Miss Greedy. First you grab Miss Mattie Lou's husband, then you grab property that should rightly be Loma's and Mary Willis's.'
Miss Love didn't answer as Mrs. P. marched out. I need to say that for a long time Miss Love never answered those who called her Miss Blakesley. Some folks who hadn't planned on speaking to her at all started saying for meanness,
"'Mornin', Miss Blakesley.'
But the only ones she spoke back to were the few who called her Miss Love, or for meanness, Miss Simpson. Pink Predmore told me that what really burned his mother up was the way Mr. Blakesley got to laughing. She heard him say, "'Dog it, Miss Love, I'd sure hate for you to get mad at me. Wouldn't you, Hoyt?' Grandpa didn't give Papa time to answer before he added, "'In case Thelma don't pass the word around, Miss Love, maybe you better get up at the next Ladies' Missionary Society meeting and say it again.' Or take out a personal advertisement in the Cold Sassy Weekly.
The word will get around, Miss Love said, bitter.
After Pink's mother left the store, she went across the street to Clark's to get her mail, and was just coming out when Miss Love swept from the store with the last of her boxes and climbed into the buggy. As Mrs. Predmore put it,
she clucked at that silly mule like he was a horse and drove off like that old buggy was a gold coach.
Miss Effie Bell was in her yard hanging out clothes when Miss Love got home. She told it around with great satisfaction that
that woman was just a-crying all the time she unloaded the buggy. And late that night I seen Rucker pacing the brick walk in Mattie Lou's rose garden. The lamp in Miss Love's room went off round midnight, but Rucker was still out there in that garden, walking back and forth, forth and back. I could see him by the moon. Poor Rucker, I reckon he was so upset after Mattie Lou died he didn't hardly know what he was doing marrying that woman. So I can forgive him, but not her. She could have had the decency to refuse his proposition. Instead, she latched a holt. A grieving man just ain't no match for a scheming woman, especially a pretty one.
Chapter 29 I agreed with Mama. There was just no excuse for the way Miss Love acted. No nice lady would pick a fuss in public like that, much less tell anybody and everybody her personal business. What on earth got into her? Somehow it brought to mind the time I helped Smiley Snodgrass blow up a hen with a bicycle pump. We liked to die laughing watching that bloated chicken wobble around like a darned balloon. It's far-fetched to compare that to Miss Love blowing up Cold Sassy, but I'm saying it's one thing to embarrass a hen,
and another thing entirely to embarrass a family and a whole town. Neither Mama nor I said much for a while, just sat there on the porch in the dark waiting for Papa. While the tree frogs croaked and the porch swing creaked, it came to me that there might not have been a fuss at the store if I'd told what Miss Love said the day I helped her clean up. Gosh, I'd felt so set up and proud her confiding in me like I could be counted on to keep my mouth shut, and all the time she must have been hoping I'd scatter her words broadcast like turnip seed. Probably Miss Love thought Mama and them would take her right on into the family if they knew she wasn't a real wife and that all she'd ever get out of Grandpa was the house and furniture, not the store, not the farmlands or his other houses, or the railroad stock and the cottonseed oil company stock.